Today, I'm talking to Robbie Briggs, founder and former CEO of the top luxury brokerage in Dallas, Texas, Briggs Sotheby's International Realty. Robbie walks us with full transparency through his journey to the top, where he remained steadily for a few decades until a sudden near crash. The near crash that was reality for Robbie is one that remains only in the worst nightmares for most entrepreneurs. It was through sheer faith, focus, and action that he positioned Briggs Sotheby's in the end in its most profitable position since its founding. Robbie gets real. He shares on-the-ground examples and he goes deep as he and I talk about building a real estate empire and transforming adversity to advantage along the way. This is the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. Powered by Breakthrough Luxury Coaching, this podcast was created for real estate agents across the world to come together and listen in on conversations with the top real estate agents in the United States and around the world, sharing their stories and ideas and what takes our business to the next level. All right, everybody. It's the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where real estate agents tell how they do it, top real estate agents. And we have on the show a good friend who should have come on a long time ago. He is the founder of Briggs Sotheby's, and there is so much more that we're going to talk about with Robbie today. But Robbie, thank you so much for being here.
Well, I'm flattered that you would even call me. So that's great. Jerry, it's great to see you. And I've learned already just talking to you before the show what big changes you've had in the last couple of years. It's great. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, I know. I love it. You work so long to build a real estate business. Everybody forgets you're not selling anymore, even you. So I love that. It was great to talk about it and catch up on it. As most of the listeners know, I'm now a coach, Breakthrough Luxury Coaching. And everybody listening has probably already heard a lot about that. But Robbie, let's talk about you. So I'm just going to start this a little differently than usual and just put a big fun question on you. You're a guy. Dallas, Texas, big city. You have been an agent. You've been in developments. You've represented huge developments. You've run a huge company. You've sold that company. And as you've done all of that, so through all of this, you have learned so much. The luxury real estate agent in today's market, if there's anything they should know, what is it?
Well, there's a lot they should know. And, you know, I think one of the things that's really, really key is their attitude, their mindset, what they bring to the table every single day. One of the things that's interesting is what background do they need? People ask me all the time, what makes a great real estate agent? I said, it's a combination of a lot of things. Over the long period of time, I have noticed that one of the absolute best real estate agents in their past life had been a teacher. And why do I say that? And that's because every single day, a real estate agent has to teach their clients what they're doing. That client has only done real estate. They've only sold a house once every 5 years, maybe even longer than that. And unless they're in a business that, you know, transfers them regularly.
Still not as many.
So they, and it doesn't matter. The real estate business changes all the time. And a real estate agent's job is to stay up with it, stay current. So they're constantly teaching. And the thing about a teacher is they're not motivated by money. The agent that is 100% motivated by money, the client knows it. They can feel it. They don't trust it. If they really think that that client, that agent cares about them as a person and cares about their dreams and cares about what they're trying to accomplish, they'll use them every time. And they don't use them because they drive a fancy car. They don't use them because they belong to the right club or any of that. They choose them because I trust this person. I know that this person, he or she, can get it done, and they're going to represent me, and that's what I want. And granted, everybody wants to make money. They're in the business to make money. I understand that, but there's a difference between wanting to make money and wanting to use the business to make money. Those are two different things. They're going to do their job, and they're going to do it well because in their heart they want to do it well. If that's their motivation, their clients are going to always trust them and believe them. And I think that's why I was able, people trusted me. People just trusted me. And I told somebody this the other day, it doesn't always work out this way, but in my best situation, I want everybody to feel like they want. I'm not out to just hammer somebody that's down and out. I want everybody in a deal to feel like they won and that they would walk away from the deal going, well, I didn't get exactly what I wanted, but it's good enough.
You know, isn't it? I think the funny thing about real estate is, and what I loved about it is, it's a much more collaborative business. Work with your competition, and everybody that comes to the table very often doesn't really have to be there. It's not like you could put them in a corner and make them do. You can think you're going to make them do it and watch them walk, right? Watch them walk, even if it's there. You think back to what you were talking about. You know, a top real estate agent, or when you look at being successful, when you look at people hiring you, they're hiring you because they know that you want what's best for them. And then you're thinking, but I've got to make the money. But I think what's interesting is what's driving the desire for the money. It's never money. It's growth. It's excellence. It's serving others. And like, what is it? What is it that's driving every agent so they can get to the core of what they bring to the table and what makes them successful? You said something else that I thought was really interesting earlier that we weren't recording yet. I thought was like, wow, everybody needs to hear this. It was about how much business is really out there and some of what business is there, what we see. You know, it's not necessary. It's like Michael Dreyfuss said this on the show a couple of years ago. He said, you know, a lot of times businesses, or maybe always, it's seeing what other people don't see. Or in this case, it's you're talking about the Dallas market, and we were talking about sometimes people feel like there's just not enough business. Maybe there's just too much.
Well, I learned that concept pretty early on. I was a brand new agent and I didn't know anything, but I was gonna work hard and I was gonna try and work smart. And even in the dark ages when I started wanting to utilize every bit of technology that I could find. So I was one of the first agents to have a pager. Now, I mean, that sounds ridiculous, but we didn't have cell phones. So people would say, why do you have a pager? And I go, well, because I've got a wife and a baby at home. If I have a pager, they can page me. I can stop at 7-Eleven, answer the call, take care of business, and move on. And by the end of the day, I don't come back to the office and find a stack of pink slips with all these people that I've got to call back at night. So I can spend the evening with my wife and baby. And so, but so I learned that technology was a tool to make you be able to do what you want to do better. But
Wow.
at the same time, starting, one of our competitors, and she was extremely competitive. I'll never forget, was at a, we were at some sort of luncheon, and she stood up, started talking about her business and how it was going to grow and how she's going to grow it and all that. And she, from the podium, pointed at me because I came into the business. My dad had started it in 1960. He just had 12 agents. It wasn't like a big company, but I came into it and this agent stood from the podium and pointed at me and said, "That's my competition. That's who I plan to put out of business." And I was like, "Wow. Wow." And, obviously, what does that do? It stirs up fear, it stirs up all kinds of whatever. And I go, "Wait a second. I'm not going to think about that. I'm not going to think about my competitors. I'm just not going to think about that. There is plenty of business out there, and I'm just going to do my job today. I'm going to put my head down. I'm going to put my pants on, and I'm going to go to work, and I'm not going to think about my competitors." And as best as I could, I spent my career not thinking about the competitors. Because there is plenty of business. If you just put your head down and do the work and learn the business and hone your skills and build trust with people, there's plenty of business. I think one of the things that we did say before the show, when we were growing our company and we moved into a new market, and I'm not going to say which one because I don't want to cast anything on them, but we moved into this new market, and all the agents said, "Well, I know your Turtle Creek office. Just they all sell $2 million, $4 million houses and all that. We don't have that, so we're not going to ever have the kind of volume that they have because our average sales are 500 to 800." And I was like, "What?" What? I see houses here that are more expensive than that. You could be selling ranches that are just outside of your area. Why are you limiting yourself to only saying that you can only sell $500,000 to $800,000 houses? I just don't get it. And it took a while, but one, we would find an agent that didn't have that mindset. And all of a sudden, that agent would take off like a rocket selling expensive homes. And the
Wow.
other agents would go, "Well, wait a second. How did you do that?" But it is mindset. Yes, maybe the majority of the houses are less expensive or whatever, but if you position yourself right and you do the right things, you'll find all kinds of business. That's one of the things I do love about real estate is every day is different. Every agent's business can be different. They don't all have to try and sell the same house.
We can't sell them all. We can't. We really actually can't.
No,
I mean, I'm not an either or. I'm a both girl, but we actually can't sell them all.
you're right. You can't, and your competitor's gonna get some of them, and great, maybe you'll have the buyer. Great, it all works out in the end.
Yeah, and we're talking about too. We're talking about competition, and then we're talking about mindset and focus. So
Right.
I'll start with the second thing we said. Like summing up what you said is, look. What you look at is what you see. You come into a market, they were looking at a part of the market. But the funny thing is, when you look at competition, because they cross over, it's not that there's not enough business, that there's too much. Which business are you looking at? Are you looking at
Right.
what you think is there? Are you looking for what you want, focusing on it, and taking the action to do it? And then the element of competition and the woman, I can't, that, I, it reminds me of a similar story in my life. But it's shocking when people do that, that says that I'm going to get you. Well, the funny thing is, you only say that when you believe that business, whether it's real estate or any business, is a zero-sum game.
Right.
But this isn't about taking in any. I was listening to a podcast. It reminds me of Elon Musk, who I kind of love and talk about a lot on the show. But also, it reminds me of a podcast of somebody not as well known, but he was being interviewed by Tim Ferriss. And in the interview, this guy had repeatedly started businesses and grown them. And this wasn't even real estate. It was just small businesses and grown them into producing into million, multi-million dollar business, multi-million dollar revenue businesses. And the question was, how do you do it? And he said, well, the one principle I built my business, the one principle that I find works every time, the businesses that build a business to dominate, to take, always lose. They always go under. Maybe not at first, but eventually. He said the businesses that go into a business to contribute, to say, hey, what is this industry and how does my business make it better?
Right.
Back to what are we building that builds so much that
Right.
what it brings back to us is more than we could have ever taken, because to take is to bring something down.
Right.
And so isn't that interesting? And if we look, we won't name any
Right.
companies or people, but if you look at this industry, it's the peoples and the people, that actually is a word, but the
Yes, it is.
people and the companies that are building the business to align to an industry and build it up truly, right?
Right.
See, it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting how they tend to flourish
Yeah.
with
Well,
time.
what you're doing right now is helping agents flourish.
Well, thank
So
you.
that's really great. That's a gift.
So as you look, and thank you, by the way, I don't want to
Sure.
bypass. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now over time, as you've looked at that, and you get like I like to go like in the clouds and then get in the weeds again, or in the dirt, as Gary Vee says. But Gary Vee founded Wine Library, and he's famous for anybody listening who doesn't know who he is, or if you don't know who he is. But anyway, he's famous for media production and making things go viral on social media and understanding marketing, but and business growth. But as you look like at the agents, one of the things you said was the agent that comes into a business and sees what's there for them and focuses on it is the agent that succeeds. Do you have any examples or fun stories, or even examples that maybe somebody here like, no way, but they had that and they did it, or the opposite, or
Well, one of them, we were with a couple friend of ours years ago. This was years ago, and we were going to the State Fair of Texas on a Sunday night. We were all together, and the husband was a successful businessman. The wife had a small job at Neiman Marcus, not for the money. She wanted the discount on the clothes. That was her motivation to work at Neiman's. And I said, Linda, that's great. That's great. But you know what? You have all the attributes of being a fantastic real estate agent. And I said, you're very similar to our very best agent, personality-wise, everything, the whole package. Have you ever thought about doing real estate? And she said, oh, Robbie, no. Anyway, about 3 days later, she called me and she said, were you serious? And I said, absolutely, I was serious. I think you'd make a great real estate agent. And this is the example that shows why she was a great real estate agent. She went out, got her license quickly, whatnot. she read in the paper that EDS, Electro Data Systems, Ross Perot's company, was hiring a new president. And he was coming in from, I'm not sure where. Linda knew some of the higher ups at EDS, and she picked up the phone and called one of them and said, I see you're bringing in a president. He's going to need a real estate agent. And I know I can help him. She didn't say, I'm brand new in the business. Could you throw me a bone? She acted like she had it all under control. And her first deal was a $6 million deal. And
Wow.
this was a long time ago. So $6 million today, that same house probably in Dallas would sell for 25 million. So, I mean, it was a big deal. And all the agents in the office just were
They weren't
flabbergasted.
sure what to think, right?
They did not know what to think. But, and she ended up, she and her husband ended up, even though he had a good business, he followed her into the business and then they became our top selling couple for years, and
Wow.
then they retired. And So she's now, she still refers tons of business to us. She still could do it if she wanted to, but she doesn't. She's just re happy to be retired.
I love that story. That is one of those things where I go, hey, everybody listening, would you replay that? Because there's some little things in there that are just these little nuggets. Because she said, what I love is she came in and said, it wasn't, hey, I would love it. I would love what you do. It was, hey, you've got this going on. I bet he needs somebody. I could help.
Right.
Like, own what you're there for, own what you can do, and show up and deliver it. I mean, and when you see people who know how to do that,
Right.
what is it? Like, what is the, sometimes there's just something in their core that they all have in common, the confidence, or what do you think that comes from?
Well, I do think there's a level of confidence. And some people have to grow into confidence.
Yeah.
And some people come into the business and it frightens them because they've never done anything like it. Other people have had experiences that have prepared them already. One of our agents came to me one day. She had been the attorney for 7-Eleven for years. And she came to me and she said, I'm thinking about getting my license and I'm trying to decide between you, but this other company, there's somebody there that will take me on their team. And that's sort of comforting. And I said, Lucy, you don't need to be on anybody's team. Are you kidding me? You know so many people in this town. And just knowing people isn't the answer. You may know, I've known agents that know everybody under the sun and nobody uses them. Why? They haven't earned the confidence of the people that know them that they can do the business. They may think they're the nicest person on the world and they want to invite them to every party they have because they're fun, but they've never bridged that. This person knows the business. This person's smart. This person can represent me. I said, Lucy, you've already proved that. You have been an attorney for one of the biggest companies in Dallas. So, hello, I don't think you need to be on somebody's team. We'll help you learn the nuances. And I said, and the first thing we should do is we should have a party at the Dallas Country Club and welcome you to real estate and let all those people know that this is what you're doing now and you're taking it seriously.
Wow.
Her business was great from the beginning. Boom. People just absolutely trusted her.
What a great story, because you touched on, and we had even talked about this in business, it's about how you position yourself.
Right.
So we're talking about confidence, but here I'm gonna repeat something, and I'm gonna get into that story for everybody. Number one, what you look at, you see. Number two, or more important, is we were talking about when people come in opportunities, how do they win them? Well, one of the big approaches is what's in it for them. In this woman who was at Neiman Marcus, she came and she didn't say, could you give me a favor, throw me a bone? Here's what I have to offer you. Now we're going to take it to the next level. There's another agent who was going to join a team. And in your world as a leader, because I think a really important thing, and is way underspoken to, is what is a great leader? A great leader is someone who understands what's in it for other people. This woman came in, and when she said she was thinking about a team or you, the response you gave her was not about, it was truly about her. And not
Right.
only that, now going back into positioning, if everybody's following Jerry Metcalf, but the positioning of her is look at someone who, how she positioned herself in her transition and how who was around her positioned her. She should have, could have come in under somebody in some team and then been aligned to people that really didn't have her level of connection, success, even sophistication, for lack of a better word,
Right.
or take where you are and position it to really elevate herself to the next level. So that it's an elevation, not a downgrade or even a lateral movement into being a real estate agent.
Right.
All in how you position yourself and how you launch it. I mean, that is a powerful, small one conversation probably changed that person's life.
Well, she's done really, really well and continues to do really well. I'm thinking of two other agents that have done really well through our company. One for many years was unequivocally our top agent. However, she had a really difficult personality.
Sometimes that
Funnily enough, I mean, there were a lot of people that just really, really didn't like her, but she was good and people knew it. And she was good in that she constantly looked at social media. She was engaging in social media, not in any kind of business way. She did know a lot of people, and she was one of those that everybody loves her, but at the same time, she can be really tough. And so you just kind of, but she would notice that somebody would make a comment like, "I wish I had a bigger backyard so that I could actually have my daughter's wedding in the backyard." And she would go, "Okay, Dean, I know that person over there has a really big backyard and they'd like to move to there. Ding. And those people, we could get them to go to a high rise because their kids are all gone." And she would put together deals that were not on the market five through. I mean, boom, 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 boom. And she used her head. She thought and put things together. And wasn't afraid to pick up the phone and call somebody and say, "What would you do if I brought you a great offer on your house?"
Well, and she was looking at what's in it for them. A big key was she's listening. And we all know this. I mean, this is like whatever level of business we get into, it's just like, for everybody who's listening, who's already doing half a billion or a quarter of a billion a year, and everybody who's listening and you're in the middle or everybody else who's listening, you're new. Big one. Listen, this business, this isn't about going out there and hoping that someone gives you the job. This woman is going out there, and I would say, that's it. You've got to see the opportunities, see what people don't see, right? This woman was listening where no one else was and jumping, not waiting, jumping in front of the opportunity in what was in it for them.
Right. Absolutely. The other thing that I've noticed about really great agents, and that is they have learned how to tell somebody the truth. They aren't afraid to say, "No, your house isn't worth that. No, you've got to get this living room looking better." Whatever it is, some of the most difficult conversations, but they have learned not to shy away from that. It is a waste of time if you are not going to tell people the truth. And you should walk away from some business that you know in your heart is not going to work. Why waste everybody's time? And that takes a very strong agent. To know, again, back to there's always enough business, to know I am better off not taking this listing. These people are not realistic. This is not going to sell. I should tell them the truth, and maybe they'll come back to me second or third go round. Maybe they won't. But I've got too much good things going on to waste my time fooling with that. Not with those people. It doesn't have anything to do with the people. It's not a reflection on the people. It's just I can't provide you. I do not believe that I can get you that number. I do not believe that we can sell your house if you don't do X, Y, and Z. And walk away from it and not look back. Just walk away from it.
It's funny how when you say yes to something, what are you saying no to?
Right.
What
That's
are all the
absolutely
other things you said no to?
right. You've taken up time that you could be doing something really valuable.
Or you might have lost three other good clients because you took one bad one. Right?
Our
I mean,
current
it's,
best,
yeah.
client agent at Briggs Freeman is he's very smart. He is kind of quiet. It's not all about personality for him, even though he's got a great personality, but it's not about personality. He knows the numbers. He's got somebody on his team, but that's all they do all day long is run the numbers, run analysis on properties. And he goes in and he has all the data. That's when you can really tell the truth, is when you can show them, okay, Mr. Smith, I know you think your house is worth this. Now let's look at all these other properties and what's been going on and what the stock market is doing and what this is doing. You have to know other businesses to know what's happening in our business. And he's just really smart, and people know it. And people know that he's gonna and he is very well connected, and but it's really because of they have confidence that he knows what
Yeah.
he's
Well, it's being the best at something
doing.
is way underrated. When you're the best, when having this podcast and we've had over 300 interviews with top agents around the country, there's not one that doesn't know their market better than anybody.
Right.
Not one.
Not
And it's like,
one.
well, how
Yeah.
can they not know? How do they know it the best? Like, how do you, because they all know who their client is. They all know who they're selling to. And for those people, they are the best. And those people, back to the beginning of this conversation, they're not everybody. And so in that, I love something else you said. For you have a lot of people who think about, when you think about this business, whether it's, again, I want to break into the next level, it's what are the things I have that are going to elevate me, that make me the best in my industry. And then when somebody's just looking at this business in general, I've had a lot of people say, I think I'm kind of introverted. I'm not really sure this is like I don't. Well, sometimes that's the best thing that you can have, because that gives you the focus to dial in and know those numbers. Because many, many, many people, if they can just, what they really need from us is the information. They can make the decision. We don't, like, I've found, like, I don't even need to tell you your house isn't worth it. When I show you the data and ask you the right questions, the best thing I can do is for me, for is when my clients go, well, I don't have clients anymore, and as they are not clients who buy and sell houses, but when they go, Jerry, I know I was thinking about 5 million, but maybe we should go more at like 4.2. Like, I was looking at these numbers and I was thinking about what you were saying about the time on market and these listings that didn't sell. And maybe, like, to your point, it's like, know the market, bring the confidence, and think about what's in it for them.
And
Know the
another thing
market,
is
bring
that
confidence, know what's in it for them. Yeah.
I grew up in Dallas. I had lots of contacts. I just did. I just did. So I just knew lots of people in Dallas on all different levels, and when I came into the business, I wasn't afraid to call anybody. And I would call them and I'd make it kind of like it was a game. I'd say, hey, I am dialing for dollars. And I know you're not thinking about selling, but I went through a house today. I think you should look at it, even if you're not interested. You want to go see it? I never had anybody say, Robbie, that's a waste of my time. I can't believe you called me. They would always say, oh my gosh, thank you so much for calling. I can't believe you thought of me. I said, yeah, you're the first person I thought of when I walked through this house. I don't know why. I just thought of you. And I think you should look at it. That's really how I built my business, was just being in front of people, talking to them. But then later on, I shifted a little bit like you did, probably 10 years into the business. I started hearing from agents. Well, his dad gave him that. My dad didn't give me anything. He didn't. He never gave me anything. But I thought, you know, if I really want to grow this company, because by then my dad had semi-retired, and I said, if I really want to grow this business and get the best agents in this city, I'm not going to compete with them. I'm just not going to compete with them. I'm not going to sell. I'm not going to list. I'm going to refer all my business to them. I'll walk with them through the deals. I'll show up, but my name is not going to be other than
I think
Rick.
there's a lot of power in that, right?
Right. And obviously my name was on the sign, but it was never on the
With the
swinger.
company, yeah.
It was never on the swinger. And I was never in any ads with listings. And so from that point on, all my competitors, they were the number one agent in their firm, without a doubt. And I always wondered, now, why would that good agent want to work for a broker
They're
who
competing.
they're competing with, and their name is on the sign, and the people call, because I get tons of calls. People call me all the time about the business, and it is because my name is on the sign. But I quickly tell them, I said, I am going to put you with an agent that you're going to love, because I've listened to what you're saying. I know what kind of personality this needs to be. And actually, I'm going to give you a couple of choices, but I think I know which one you're going to love. And I'll be right there. You can pick up the phone, call me anytime. I'm going to know exactly what's going on with your property, but I'm not the actual listing or selling agent. And it was great, you know.
I love because it's listen, listen, listen. Something else you said, I think, is really worth touching on, and you've said it in a couple of different ways, is there are agents who know everybody and they don't do a bunch of business. And then there's agents who are really successful and everybody says, oh, they were born into it. They had, and I would say, I think, and I'd love to hear your, this is something I've always thought about that. I've always thought, no, because if you don't have a network, you have the privilege, this is what I had, of building the one you want.
Right.
And if you do have a network, which was not the privilege that I had, well, in some ways, well, in my business, I did not. When I built my business, I built it from zero. And I
Right.
had the option and the privilege of building the network I wanted. And I saw agents who had networks. And I saw a lot of agents. I saw agents who killed it with that, and maybe
Right.
in ways I couldn't have because they had it and they
Right.
had talents that worked for them and they knew how to utilize them. But then there were other agents who having that network was really a detriment because you're new and you have a network and you go make a mistake early. It's funny how people don't forget. People remember, they might remember something great, but something just as bad in their own minds is a lot worse, and they tell a lot more people. It can
Right.
really work against you.
It can. It can.
And so as you build your business knowing that, anybody can learn from this, especially because there are many ways in which that could be a detriment. How did you work with that?
Well, I will say this. I had that network within a certain area of Dallas. It was the older established, higher end network.
The one everybody wants.
The one that everybody wants. But at the same time, when I wanted to grow my company, I knew that we had to be bigger than that. And I knew that we did not need to be known as the realtor for Buckhead or the realtor for Highland Park. No, we did not need that. That would limit where we could go. And that is why I joined Sotheby's in 2008. The market died. We had a big crash. Lehman Brothers went out of business. One more chance to walk through a difficult time. And in 2000, by 2009-ish, nobody in Dallas was buying big houses. They just were not, except for we had a fair amount of people coming from Mexico who were very, very wealthy that wanted to get out from under the cartels if anything happened. And they bought
Wow.
families, beautiful homes in Dallas and Houston. Big, big movement for that. And then we had the occasional European investors that would come, and we had the occasional Chinese that would come. And it just occurred to me, nobody in Mexico City or Frankfurt, Germany, or Shanghai has ever heard of me. They've never heard of my competitors, but they've all heard of Sotheby's. And they may not understand it, but they all heard of Sotheby's and they knew what that meant. That meant luxury. So it positioned us. And the other part of that's so I joined Sotheby's and then began really taking our company out to the market in parts of the city that didn't know me. The biggest, fastest growing part of Dallas is the North, Plano, Frisco, all this north. That's where the corporations go because they can get into good schools. There are people there, they can, it's just where corporate moves are, is Plano and Frisco. There, I know people out there, but I don't know people out there and they don't know me. But when we started putting the blue sign out there, agents flocked to us and clients flocked to us. And same thing when we went to Fort Worth. Fort Worth's a really different city than Dallas. They're actually Dallas doesn't care at all, but Fort Worth really cares. And I knew going to Fort Worth that I couldn't be too Dallasy. That doesn't work. I have to play the Fort Worth, kind of good old boy, slower deal. Go to the rodeo, do all the things that Fort Worth people do. It's not to say that it's a cow town. It's not. But they like to say that Fort Worth is where the West begins and Dallas is where the East peters out. That's their sign. So, I mean, it's like life's
I
too
love
short to
that.
live in Dallas, so.
Oh, I love that. You gotta love that. Even if you live in
So I
Dallas,
had
you
to go
gotta
over
appreciate
there
that.
and I utilized Sotheby's. We had Sotheby's auction house events. We had all that because they do play that.
Yeah.
They didn't play Robbie Briggs. They didn't care about Robbie Briggs, but they did care about Sotheby's. So you just have to adapt to what works, And so
Yeah.
you don't have to have the network like you didn't. You built it. Well, we had to
Yeah.
build it in Plano. We had to build it in Fort Worth. We had to build it in South Lake. And that's what you do.
Know, when you build things, it's like you know this better than anybody, or certainly me. When you build something, it always takes a lot more than you think. And every time you build something, it always presents challenges that you didn't see coming. I mean, and it also presents opportunities you didn't see coming too. I mean, like probably building the Sotheby's brand and everything you did, but in everything that you do, you said something that I just was like, I love the way you said it. Because I typed it out because I was like, this is so good. I got to get this word for word. But you said, one more chance to walk through a difficult time. Like, so I'm just like, one more opportunity, because it's all opportunity. When you look at one more chance to walk through a difficult time, and you're talking about, identify what works, know what works. When you look at, like, there's a lot of difficult times, there's a lot of great times. What's your advice on the difficult times?
Well, it is the whole foundation of what I have done everything about. And that's my faith. I have a strong faith. I believe in God. I believe that He has got His hand on me, and He and I can trust Him to guide me. And there have been a lot of times where it's like nail biting, How are we going to get through this, Lord? And sometimes it was down to the very last deal. I mean, it's just amazing. But he's never failed me. Just never has. I went through a really difficult time a couple years ago, and I know you know that, in that we did have a mass exodus of our agents. And we went from this level of production and income to this level. And you're waking up going, well, how are we going to do this? What, how are we going to make it? But even in the midst of that, and it was extremely painful because the competitor that was so successful at taking our agents, we really trained them, don't go talk to Robbie. Go in the middle of the night, move all your stuff out, and then send him a text. And so I, for a year and a half, just got text after text after text of, I'm moving, I'm leaving. And these are people that have been with me 20 years, 15 years. It was very, very painful. But same time, I was like, he's still with me. I'm not sure how this is going to end up, but he's still with me. And we're going to be fine. We're going to be fine. It's just going to be different. And again, it was taking the opportunity. Okay. We need to improve. We've got areas in our company that we need to shore up. We need to, we've been maybe working on our laurels a little bit as the firm that nobody leaves ever,
Yeah.
never. So all of a sudden, 150 agents leave. That's like mind-boggling.
Oh, yeah.
But here's the thing that's so amazing is I kind of, we had to cut expenses. We closed a few offices. We did what we had to do to survive. And we continued to put our pants on, just like I said at the very beginning. You put your pants on, you go to work, you get your head down, you don't 100% look at the competition. It's all the same things. And for me, it's spending time on my knees and thanking the Lord that he's in control and that he hasn't left me and I'm not alone and I'm not powerless and we're going to see it through. And then COVID hit and I went, oh my gosh, we haven't even made it out of the ditch yet. And now we have this. And we had just totally redone our main office and everybody was coming in and everybody was so excited about it. And a month and a half later, shut it down.
It's like, wow.
Wow. And I was like, okay, how are we going to deal with this? And, but within about 2.5 months, you know this, the end of this story, the real estate market went bananas. I had less overhead. Yes, I had fewer agents, but we were more profitable than we had ever been in the history of our company. Doesn't mean we sold, the volume wasn't there, but the profits were. And it
And the
was about
quality
then.
was.
And it was about then that I was like, you know, I'm 70 now. I was getting close to it. And I was thinking, I think it's maybe time to sell the company. And actually I really felt like I went to the Lord and I said, you know, I'm kind of tired. And I seriously sensed he said, do you want out? And I said, yeah, I really do. And he brought a buyer and they bought it literally at the height of the market. And I'm, you know, it's still a good investment for these people because Dallas is a strong market and it will always be
Yeah.
a strong market. And things are a little flat right now, but in my history, things can even plummet. But give it another 5 or 6 years, and that old number is history. the market just keeps
Well,
growing and the prices keep going up over time. And you're not a short time, but 10 years, my goodness, the
if you look
number.
at, your story that, it was adapting to what works, but what's like what you went through. I mean, when you're like, when something happens, like we hear this story, guess what we have? The benefit of hindsight. When you're in it, you don't know what a good place it's going to.
No,
And
you
there's two
don't.
things I think about is one is, or even Steve Jobs says, when you look back, you can see all the dots connect forward, but you don't see that. But in it, the thing I was thinking from the very beginning of the story, when you said faith, I thought, where in having the faith, even when nothing's making sense, that this is actually happening for me, not to me. And I think about there was an interview I heard recently with a developer in South Florida, and he had the question of, you always are, you're known for being a conservative developer, but you are always, it could be any market, and you're always doing deals. You've grown a bit, it's always doing deals. And they said, what is that? What's the difference between you and everybody else? And he said, the first thing he said, I was kind of like, what? He goes, reputation, because I'm kind of like character. But to his point, he said, whatever's happening, business, real estate agent, developer, broker, owner, it's an emergency room. When you're successful, stuff is always going wrong.
What's going on?
It's always going wrong. And being successful, a symptom of that is being in the midst of what's going wrong because you're the guy who can make it go right. And he said, in all of that, it's we're the guys who stick it through. I mean, when you tell that, there's many brokers that have not that wouldn't share. So thank you for sharing. They wouldn't walk us through that and share that so openly. And how much, like, look at what great things have come of it. But
No,
it
it's
sure,
been.
that is a tough thing. And I think there was a lot of just serendipity might be the right word because it worked out great, but it sure didn't feel like it at the time
No, it
that
did not feel
presented that, that prevented that even in that case, look at what great things come out when there's faith. How do we, like you gave many examples of how you made this happen for you, not to you, and how you ended up on top.
One thing that's funny is the agent, the broker that pointed her finger at me when I first came in the business said, he's my competition.
We never asked what happened. Yes.
Guess where she ended her career?
I don't want
Briggs Freeman. She ended her career at Briggs Freeman.
I mean, that says a lot. That says so
That
many
great?
things about persistence, character, doing good business, making the right decisions. I was having a conversation with my dad last night. He's my buddy. Look, he always, and he's my dad, obviously, but he's always been my rock in many ways. And we were talking about, we were talking a little bit about what we're talking about right now, about in a situation when you're in a situation, there's recognizing the environments where things are being taken and in building anything about giving. But in all of that, we also sort of talking about perseverance. You see, it's funny. Perseverance is a funny thing because some people would say perseverance is you just don't give up. But that could mean a lot of things. He said, perseverance is always being the guy or the person that is making the best choices possible. The perseverance in that. And to have an outcome like what we've just shared is an outcome that says, hey, we all make mistakes. But when you're a guy that has the perseverance to stick by what's right again and again, whatever's coming your way, from your story to this developer story we just shared that parallels it. It's just, and then that faith says, look, I can't calculate this all out, but if I apply it and have that kind of perseverance, it's amazing what transpires.
Along these lines, and I'm just going to share this in that one of the things that I've been learning even more about lately than I ever knew before, and that's identity. Now, identity isn't what you do. If your identity is in what you do, you're in trouble. Your identity is who you are. And so our quest should really be, who am I? what really was I created to be from the very beginning? And not too long ago, this guy took me through this exercise, you could say, and that starts with, okay, there are lots of voices in your head that tell you all the time, you can't do that, you're not good enough, you don't know enough people, you don't have enough money to go into real estate, just whatever it is, all kinds of things. He said, okay, let's take out a piece of paper and let's write down all those things that you believe about yourself that are actually hurting you. And so now you've got on a piece of paper, and let's close our eyes and imagine that perfect love is right there with you. And you hand this list to perfect love. What does he do with it? In my case, I saw him wad it up and throw it away. I was like, well, okay. And then this guy says, okay, now why don't you ask perfect love, who do you say I am? If we think that if we think all these voices are easy to talk to, constantly talking to us, why would we not think that perfect love talks to us? And immediately, for me, what came up was beloved. I was like, I like that because I don't always feel beloved. But to know that perfect love thinks that I'm beloved, that's really important. And then and then as time goes on, he will show you other things that you were designed from the very beginning. And one of the things that I loved was somebody told me, you know, we all know that snowflakes are totally individual. There's not another snowflake like the one that you're holding in your hand. But they're all made out of H2O. All across the board, we're all just H2O. What, you know, whatever we're made of, we're all the same. Doesn't really matter. But Jerry Metcalf is this particular snowflake that there's only one of. She doesn't have to try and be anybody else. She just has to be her, and that's her gift to the world. She needs to bring that to the world. And and you know the, so one of the things is, I'm going to be totally honest. One of the things he told me was I was a warrior. And I was like, a warrior? I've never been a warrior. I don't like to fight. What? I'm not a warrior.
I love that. I'm like, yes, you are. Yes, you are.
But I've, it's kind of pointed out to me that that's what I've done all my life. Not in the sense of earthly war, but I've battled all kinds of things. And I try, like I said, I try to win the war for both of us. I'm trying to find peace. That what's war about in the first place? War is a horrible thing on in our world, and we should be looking for more ways. How do we just come to
Peace.
and so what do
You
you
know
want
what?
to say about
Well,
that?
here's what I think. It's you know, when because I'm like, yes, it's not about war. It's about strength. It's about you. Something you said was, "Who am I? What's my purpose?" And in that purpose, the warrior might come out when there are other factors in the world that come along, whether they're factors that come into life or places of destruction rather than building, and being the warrior that whatever comes your way, You're there for what's right. You're the guy who's persistent. And that's in that there's an element of warrior because it's an element of how determined you're going to be for what's right versus, there's a saying that Martin Luther King had that said, it's the guy who's complacent. It's the guy who stops speaking and stops talking, who doesn't say something when, or who stops talking about what they care about or what matters, is the guy who starts to die. That's not the exact quote, but he literally says,
I get
when
the
we stop talking about what matters is the day we start to die. Is the
right.
guy that your purpose is what matters and living for what your purpose is. Sometimes people don't stand up for it because it hurts. And that's where the warrior comes in, is being the guy who's strong enough to back that off, because in that is where true peace, not compromise, comes. That's my take on it.
Well, where I've been working on this is a guy wrote a book about living fearless. And then he has this website called identityexchange.com. And it's pretty great, in my opinion.
Wow, it sounds amazing. I mean, just walking through that and listening to it I was walking through it. My person wasn't sure what to do. She was confused and stuff. So that was kind of cool. But because I was walking through, like, what would my answer be? Now, this has been such an awesome interview. I think we could talk all day. Because I have more questions about real estate, but I'll keep you on too. I'm gonna ask you one more question about real estate just for fun, and then I have the final three. Because
Okay.
we've got a few minutes. As you've gone from that brand new agent to running companies, and now you've even done a lot of work with big developments. Let's touch on the development component. Like, in that world, as you've evolved into that, what do you find most challenging and most what do you find most challenging and most exciting about it? And anybody looking at that element of the business, what do they need to know?
Well, most of the developments that I've worked with are high rises. And Dallas isn't known as a high rise city. It's not New York. It's
Yeah.
not, whatever. So people love terra firma in Dallas. So, I mean, we're in Texas. We can spread out on and on and on.
Everything's bigger in Texas, that is for sure.
But the high rise living is it's a choice, and it's coming to a I live in a high rise because we also have another home that we go to, and I don't want to be worrying about a house back. And there are a lot of people my age, a little younger, whatever, or in totally young couples that have not started their families that choose to live in a high rise. And the successful high rises in Dallas are the ones that also have great services. So, developers have known that I know that market. I understand that market. I believe that as they develop them, they should be talking to real estate agents that know what people are looking for and what's important. And so I love it when we are involved from the very beginning. And and right now we're bringing on a Rosewood high rise that's just getting ready to break ground. And they've leaned on us heavily as to, what do they need to have in this building. We've also been representing the building that I live in, which is a magnificent building called Hall Arts. I actually love working with the developers. They think a little differently. It's very organized. You've got systems in place to stay in touch with people and know where people are in their timeline of decision making. And Dallas is evolving more and more towards this kind of living. I'm sure Atlanta is the same. I just enjoy the
Yeah.
process. And
Well, I think
again,
it's.
I'm not the one that's listing and selling it. I find the agents that want to do that kind of business and are really good at that kind of business. For instance, from your old office, I've got Melissa France. She's on the Rosewood project because she's done a fair amount of high rises and she gets it, and she's doing a fabulous job. So she used to be
Shout out to Melissa France, right? I love it. She's wonderful. So, something that comes, it's kind of like full circle in what you just said is, in business where you got talking about examples of agents, and I talk a lot about this in agents, and we do have the group and the one-on-ones, is that, when you're doing business, it's not about getting in and competing. It's about getting, knowing who you serve, serving them best, and being in front of, seeing what people don't see, being in front of opportunities. That Pete that serve other Pete that are serving the client. We have value because we solve problems, not because we went and took something. And then when you look at development, you said something interesting is being in front of it, being at the beginning is very helpful for the developer and the sellability of the product for you. And I think about, in that, like really what get in front of the opportunities. Where are the developments? Where are the developers? Who are they? Where's the money? Where are the land parcels? What's the zoning? What's the overlay zoning? What is the vision of, what are the politics? What's the future? All of those layers to get in front of to capture opportunities and to grow them to the right place. Right?
Right.
All
So, what are
right.
your three questions?
Final questions. You're right, Web was like, you took the words out of my mouth. Okay, first question. When you look at your career and all of your successes, if there is one resource you could say, this was the most powerful resource in all of my success, what was it?
Resource. Like, give me just a quick example. What are you speaking of? Like,
I love that because I get all kinds of answers. And some every once in a while we get, no, what do you mean? Because sometimes what that question is for is to see what you think I mean. So it could be anything as basic as the CRM system the development's used to as broad as persistence or doing the right thing or perseverance, whatever comes to mind as a resource to you. If you could point to one thing to attribute to your success, what would it be? That might be.
I do think it's looking forward and vision. I mean, when I said I got started with my dad, he had a little company that had no technology, had one secretary who sat there and smoked and typed on a manual typewriter, and the 12
He was like a
agents
painting of that.
the 12 agents that were there were all really nice, and they all belonged to the right everything, but they just sat there and waited for the phone to ring. And I was like, I'm married. I actually came from architecture. My degree was a master's in architecture. I worked as an architect, but I hated it. I couldn't stand sitting at a desk. So I quit. I went into real estate only to pay the bills of my little wife and baby while I figured out what I was going to do. Well, 45 years later, da-da. But from the day one, Dad used to say, well, we're Park City's broker. I said, no, we're not. Don't say that. Don't say we are Park City's broker. We're bigger than that, And I immediately started thinking bigger than where we were. I also immediately wanted to tap into relocation. And I wanted to be part of an organization that had fingers all over the world. And so early on, I joined different organizations and got involved with that and went to conferences and met agents from all over the country. And all that was good. The only problem was anybody could belong to those organizations. So I might go up and entertain the head of Latter, of one of the big firms in Chicago, and we'd have a great time and have a great relationship. But he wasn't the one that was placing the relocation. It was a staff person that opened up a book and said, Dallas, Texas. Okay, here's this company, here's this company, here's this company. This company has 2,000 agents. This company, it didn't have anything to do with quality at all. It was just in that book. And I was like, I can really waste a lot of money chasing that. And again, that was one of the reasons why I loved joining Sotheby's, is I do know really good agents all over the world in Sotheby's, and I know that they are going to send us their referrals. Period. End of story. It's just, and I'm going to send any referral that I have. If there's not a Sotheby's company in that town, it's usually not the case, but I'm going to send it to the Sotheby's agent. I'm going to find out who their agent at that company is the best one to handle whatever we're sending. But I loved the network more than any part of it. I loved the network, knowing you as the top agent in Atlanta, knowing different ones in San Francisco, New York, Nikki Field, all of them, And to me, that was one of the real differentiators of our company in the luxury market space, is we got a lot of business from around the world. And it was just fun. People would call me and say, "Hey, Robbie, I'm thinking about buying a house in Florence. How do I do that?" And I immediately go,
You've got some money, right?
"Exactly. I know the agents in Florence, and so we can do that." And
I love
that is so fun. That is really fun.
And all of that, you landed there though, back to you were looking for it a long time ago. I have the George Orwell. I can see the George Orwell painting of the secretary with the cigarette and your dad and you and the agents kind of waiting. And then you've got the vision. I can see the painting right now, right? And now here you are. Here you are with the George Orwell painting and look at where we went. It's great. So who knew? Who
Who
knew?
knew?
If there's one book, it does not have to be a specific kind of book. I mean, just a book for this is the Robbie Briggs interview. If there's one book that has changed your life, what is it?
It's the Bible. That just is.
You know, I love that. There's only one other person who has given us, I think there's only one other. There could be two. Kevin Brown. Because you knew he was a priest.
No, I didn't know that.
Was he
Wow.
a priest or he was going to be a priest? He's gonna be so mad at me if I get this wrong. But oh yes, he was in practice to be a priest.
That's
And then
great.
he pivoted into real estate. He didn't become I don't think he became a priest, but he is very well versed. But I love that. And for everybody listening, this isn't about making you believe in Jesus. It is
No,
about that is a heck of a book
it
that
is
if
a
you
heck of a
it, it's
book.
like Joe Rogan, one of Joe Rogan and Elon Musk, those are my boys. Just saying, sorry if nobody likes that, or somebody doesn't like that, or maybe I'm not sorry. But both of those, not both of those guys, Joe Rogan talks about, I don't know if you've ever heard him talk about, he talks about the Bible being like a puzzle. Like depending on where you are in life, there's such a depth. The stories have such depth and such message that depending on where you're in your life, they may or may not make sense. And as you evolve, the Bible evolves with you. And I can tell you, I can look back on times in my life and go, man, if I had just listened, I even knew it was in there. If I had just done what I knew was in there and followed the advice, I'd have done a lot better, right?
Right.
Like, it's always right. It's always just
It
that great place to go to. But as I elaborate on your book or the book you gave us, what would you give us about that? What would you say about it to
Well,
anybody listening?
for one, it is a book that you don't understand necessarily. Not, but it's, but I believe that, I believe in the one that authored it. And that's what's important to me, is having a relationship with the author as well as reading his book. And so earlier you said that perseverance was having the right answers and being able to answer it right. I
Or
don't
do the
have
right always the perseverance for doing the right thing.
the, I don't always have the
You don't
answers.
always get it right, but have the perseverance for getting it right. At least keep going, making the best choices you can.
All right. But he does. And if I will just listen, he'll give me the right answers. And so that's my answer to that. And so I get up every morning at 4 and
Wow.
spend 2 hours reading, being quiet. And I love it. That's my favorite time of day. So,
Listen. That's come up several times. Listen. It's what do we hear? What are we looking at? You say, this is reminding me of Jordan Peterson. He says a little bit about what you see. What you look at is what you see, and the effort it takes to look at something and be aware of what you're looking at and perceiving. And just for everybody who's hasn't listened to him, he talks about the Bible. And I don't know if you know who Jordan Peterson is, but he was a Harvard professor. I mean, really educated. And he goes in depth about all of the cultures and how the book came together. And then he says, in the Bible, when it says something, that's not by chance.
Right.
It's there for a purpose.
For a
If
purpose.
you listen, and it's just fascinating because all of the levels of depth of wisdom that can be pulled from it. Next question.
Okay.
Last question. This is the last question.
Okay.
If there is one thing that you hope everyone gets from this conversation, if they forget everything else, what do you hope that that is?
That they would look for their identity.
Hmm.
That they would settle on, I'm enough. I don't have to prove anything to anybody. I'm enough. I'm loved, and this is who I am. And because I know who I am, then I know what to do. And that's what I would wish for anybody, because that's going to bring them peace on the inside. You can have all this other stuff going on, and it can all be going well, and still have a lot of dysfunction on the inside. So, of course, I wish for anybody and everybody to have peace on the inside. And I think you get that from when you quit looking at all the negative and start looking at who you are and why everyone, not just one type of person, not just one whatever. Everyone was designed from before they were born to be somebody, and they're all different snowflakes. Just remember that snowflake. We're all made of the same thing. I'm not any different than the guy on the street, the homeless person. I'm not, I love that Marie, that Mother Teresa would say, I see Jesus in every single person. That's what I want. I want to quit judging people. I want to be rid of trying to separate myself, protect myself, promote myself. I really just want to care for people and do what's right.
Wow,
So
that was beautiful.
that's how I'm spending the rest of my life.
It's who are we? And in that, who is our purpose? That's
So
beautiful. Thank you.
you're welcome. Thank
Robbie,
you.
it's so great to see you. And it just so great to have you on. Thank you so much.
Well, you bet. You want to be doing some coaching at Briggs Freeman?
Love to.
Okay, we're going to get that started.
Thanks for joining us for the Jerry Metcalf Podcast. To get links to our amazing guests, past shows, and more, go to breakthroughluxury.com and click on podcasts, or find us anywhere you can find a podcast. And please subscribe to the show and leave us a 5-star review so that we know that you are getting the most out of what we bring you every week.